CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. And we're very privileged to welcome Alan Dershowitz, American lawyer, law professor, a man who speaks of the U.S. Constitution easily. We're looking for guidance right now about the American and Israeli contretemps, polite foreign word. Malcolm?
Yes, thank you, Alan, for joining us. Professor Dershowitz, it's really an honor to have you. And I was wondering whether you could discuss how you interpret the various conflicting polls, one showing that a majority of Americans don't approve of the actions in Gaza, whereas 79% still support Israel, and 60% said that Israel recognized Israel's trying to avoid civilian casualties. Where do you see American public opinion, and why is it shifting this way?
It depends on which media you watch. If you watch CNN and the New York Times, you're going to get a totally and completely distorted view of what's going on in Israel. I just came back from 4 days in Israel, where I met with the prime minister, the president. I met with the head of the Mossad for 2 hours. I met with various military leaders. And when you see the honest picture of what's happening, and let me tell you two things that you don't know if you see, if you read American and watch American media, there is no famine in Gaza. Categorical. I've seen the data. I've seen the pictures. There's enough food to feed everybody in Gaza if the food would be allocated properly by Hamas instead of stolen. There is not a single person who died of starvation or malnutrition in Gaza, notwithstanding the pictures you see on CNN. All the pictures you see on CNN are pictures of people who had pre-existing medical conditions and would have died. That's number one. Number two, it is totally, totally false that 32,000, 33,000 people have been killed, two-thirds of them being women and children. The ratio of civilians to combatants killed is lower than in any war in history. It's approximately 1.2 to 1, which is lower than the 3 or 4 to 1 that generally exists. Many of the people who were killed, 13,000, were terrorists, probably another 10,000 were directly complicit in Hamas actions. For example, some of them came over the border on October 7th and actually participated in the murders and rapes. Others provided homes, rocket launchers, financial support, and still others were killed by Hamas rockets or Islamic Jihad rockets. So it depends on the data you're getting. If you get the right data, you will see that what Israel's doing is exactly what the United States would have done and tragically, and God forbid, will do if the kind of terrorism that we're seeing in Israel were to come to American shores.
Mr. Dershowitz, I read from the Times of Israel page right now, Hezbollah rocketing in the north and the IDF carrying out an exercise over the border, over Syria overnight. And then we have a terror attack in the West Bank, not to mention the Houthis. This is a war in all directions, not just in Hezbollah, not just in Hamas. Is that message getting through to the American media that there are many fronts here, not just one?
No, and especially it's not getting through that if it's not defeated in Israel, it's coming to a theater near you. I think Putin maybe have learned that lesson because it literally came to a theater in Moscow. And remember that terrorism, which has been now borrowed by many organizations, including those against the Soviet Union, was invented essentially by Palestinian terrorists well before Hamas, by the PLO, by Arafat, by the killing of Israeli athletes. It succeeded, the hijacking of airplanes. They worked. The world praised and honored terrorists. And that's why terrorism has become so rampant a tactic all over the world. And the chutzpah of Hamas actually writing a condolence note to Russia saying, oh, we're so sorry that terrorism has come to a theater near you, when they and their predecessors were essentially responsible for the spread of terrorism around the world. And it's getting worse.
If I follow just a moment, Malcolm, we spoke with Minister Dermer sometime earlier, and he made the very cogent point that all that I named, plus more we could go on about, guides us right to Tehran. Is that message in Washington, Mr. Dershowitz?
No, it's not. The Obama administration started, and now the Biden administration is continuing to coddle and to encourage Iran. Iran will, unless it's stopped, develop a nuclear arsenal. It is the octopus, and when you cut off any of its arms, it will regrow them. And that's why the central focus ultimately should be on Tehran. But right now, obviously, Israel is fighting this multi-front war for its own survival. But the time will come when Israel and the United States together will have to bring about regime change, or at the very least, destruction of Iran's ability to have a nuclear arsenal. Otherwise, the entire Middle East and Europe and ultimately the United States will be in danger. Remember, Iran regards Israel as the small devil. It's the United States that's the big devil.
Malcolm?
Amit Sassoon, a lawyer who was captured, described in unfortunate detail the horrific violence she was subjected to, including sexual violence during her captivity. And yet we see so little response from the human rights community, those who advocate, the Me Too people, all of the others. You have been an advocate for human and civil rights your whole life. How do you explain this distortion in the reaction and the failure for any sympathy for the Israeli victims?
Because you're right, I've been involved with human rights, but Amnesty International is in charge of human wrongs. UNRWA is in charge of human wrongs. These organizations that pretend to be human rights organizations are the ones who are facilitating this denial of human rights. Me too, except if you're a Jew. You can't get a radical feminist today to recognize the truthfulness of these accounts. I just came back yesterday from a visit to Israel where I met with the heads of the Mossad and other people, but I also went down and saw the places where these disasters occurred, and I spoke to women who were themselves witnesses or had accountants of witnesses. And the idea that feminist groups and gay groups and African-American groups, churches, support Hamas today shows the incredible depths of anti-Semitism. You cannot understand what's going on today unless you see Israel as the Jew among nations. If this were any other country, the human rights community, feminists and others would be on the side of the victims instead of on the side of the perpetrators. How can you explain the fact that gay organizations support Hamas, that feminist organizations support Hamas? There's only one explanation: the depth of their jealousy toward Jews. And I include many Jews among them, the Norman Finkelsteins of the world. Norman Finkelstein, yesterday in a debate with me, said although he can't justify the actions on October 7th, he can justify the people. They're like abolitionists in the South who did anything to avoid slavery. And he justified the people, honoring the people. He said they were martyrs and heroes, the rapists. And if it weren't for the fact that Israel was the Jew among nations, we would not be hearing that.
Professor, you spent many years at Harvard University. Malcolm and I have covered that anti-Semitism on Harvard for some time now. Is there an explanation? Will it lift? Will it go away?
No, it's going to get worse because it's young people. The answer is one word: meritocracy. Jews stand for meritocracy. Jews have made it in the world through hard work and innovation and intelligence. And the last thing the DEI, the diversity, equity, inclusion movement, or the intersectionality want is meritocracy. And Jews are the poster people for meritocracy. So what we're seeing is, yes, anti-Semitism, but the justification for it is an attack on meritocracy. And again, Jews represent meritocracy. So it's going to get worse because as meritocracy disappears, the success of Jews in universities, already we're seeing the number of Jews that now are accepted at Harvard is below the figure when they had quotas, anti-Jewish quotas. It was 10% back in 1920. It's now between 8 and 9%. It used to be 23% when I was a professor there. So we're seeing a diminution of Jewish presence in every area of life where people get to pick other people, where Jews still thrive, or when you can do it on your own in finance and music and comedy and surgery and law. If you don't have to be picked by someone else, you're fine if you're Jewish. But if you have to be selected by someone else, I'll make a prediction: there will be fewer Nobel Prizes awarded to Jews in the years to come. Jews will be as good at inventing things and helping people and curing diseases, but they won't get recognized. That's what's going on in the world today.
Alan Dershowitz, an American lawyer and professor for many years at Harvard University teaching. He was appointed as the Felix Frankfurter Professor of Law in 1993. Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.